Okay. Let me just get, I've unmuted you all now for a second. Can everybody hear me? Everybody ready to go?
Yes. Yes. Yes.
All right. Okay, so I wanted to tell you first how this program came to be. I have been teaching parent education for many, many years, 25 years. And in the beginning, I taught a program that I designed with a lot of great parenting skills and all those, you know, good things that we all want to know, how to talk to our children. And parents would come to the classes loving what they were learning, feeling like, oh, my God, I can't wait to get home and try this out. This makes so much sense. This is so right. You know, they'd love what they were learning. And then they came back to class often a little quieter and a little quieter until someone might eventually make the confession that now they felt worse than ever. And they felt worse than ever because now they knew what they wanted to do, but they still couldn't do it. And so I thought, you know, at first I thought, wow, it's, you know, they're not practicing enough. They just need to practice more. And then, of course, I thought, oh, I'm just not teaching it right and all of that. But then it finally occurred to me that it was because they were getting their buttons pushed. And I am assuming, because you're all on this call, that you know what I mean. You know what you want to do, or you often know what you want to do, but you find that you can't do it in the moment when you kind of fly off the handle. And you can have, you know, and I certainly learned it myself when my daughter was young and we were standing on opposite sides of her bedroom door screaming at each other. I was trying to hold it closed and she was trying to pull it open. And I had just gotten my master's degree in early childhood development, and I was teaching parents how to better communicate with their kids. So my daughter, Molly, was my teacher extraordinaire. And I had my first child, Casey. I had him for 4.5 years, and he was one of those just easygoing, piece of cake kind of kids. And I thought I was the best parent in the world. I thought, why is everybody having this trouble? I must really know what I'm doing. And then 4.5 years later, I had Molly. And she brought me to my knees and just gave me all kinds of reasons for throwing everything out the window and realizing I had to do this all over again with her because she was just so incredibly different. So I certainly had all of this happening on my own home front as well as getting that other people were having this situation as well, and I finally put it all together. So I started teaching a course called Diffusing Your Buttons, and I learned from all these other parents what goes on for all of us differently when our buttons get pushed and what all these different buttons are. So that's how this came to be. And then I wrote the book and then I designed this course. And you all, I hope, have your workbooks in front of you. And we're going to start on page 2 and just look at how you know when your button has been pushed, if you don't. Which I'm sure you do, but what happens to us is that what I call the road rage of parenting, which is we react in ways that we absolutely hate and regret. And it might feel good right then and there in this moment, in the split second when you're yelling or screaming, but as soon as it's over, you regret it. You know it's not effective. You feel all kinds of horrible feelings. You certainly get into more power struggles than you would like to get into. And the big one is you hear your mother or father coming out of your mouth saying those words you swore you were never going to say to your kids. And some of us implode, some of us explode, and you know who you are, I'm sure. We project onto our kids all of our own experiences and fears, and we sail into the future in a nanosecond, having our son who's just hit his sister over the head for the 10th time today. We've got him in jail by the time he's 15. You know, we just fly into the future and what I call catastrophize. Sometimes this behavior doesn't faze your spouse or a friend. And that's how you know it's your button. Now, often you share buttons with a spouse, but sometimes you don't. Your child may possibly remind you of a relative you hate, or an ex, or someone who you have a problem with, and you start thinking, oh my God, my child is turning into blah, blah, blah. And the most important one is you know that you never could have gotten away with what your child is doing right now. So it's very possible that consciously you are deciding to bring up your children differently than you were brought up. I'm sure many of us experience that. And when that happens, we are wanting so much to do it differently. And we want our children to have their own voices, and we want them to be able to stand up for themselves, you know, maybe differently than our experience was. But in that moment when they scream no, or you're not the boss of me, boom, you react and then think, what is this all about, and how can I deal with this? So what I want to do right now is this little exercise, and we're going to see how this works. We've got several more people on the call now. And I am going to unmute you in a second when I give you these instructions. And I actually want you to call out, and I don't know whether this is going to work or not on the phone, but I want you to call out what I'm going to ask you, and fill in on the bottom of page 2, fill in what is meaningful to you in this area. So right now, you can all talk, and I want you to just call out these are one word answers. What are the behaviors that push your button?
Siblings fighting.
There.
Not
siblings,
listening.
Siblings and not listening.
What not else? Eating. Food is a big issue with us.
Food?
Yeah.
So not eating?
Not wanting to eat healthy food, basically.
Okay.
Arguing back.
Talking back.
Arguing back when I've said no.
Arguing back.
Yeah.
Yep.
Defiance.
Defiance.
Moaning.
Moaning. Okay, moaning and whining, I imagine, probably, for some.
Crying.
Crying.
When he doesn't get his way, just crumpling and crying.
Okay.
Screaming.
Screaming.
Ignoring.
Ignoring.
Procrastinating.
Procrastinating, yep.
Mommy.
What else?
Mommy.
Not following instructions.
I left
the card. Following instructions, right. Okay, and you can continue writing anything down in your workbook that is a button pusher for you. And you may think things may come to you as time goes on. Now, the next question is, how do you feel when this behavior that pushes your buttons happens? So how, when something pushes your button, how do you feel?
Frustrated.
Frustrated.
I feel like a failure. Like I just can't get it right.
Yep.
Impotent.
Impotent, yep.
Tired.
Tired.
Hopeless.
Hopeless.
Enraged.
Enraged.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
No!
Like giving up.
Pardon me? Like giving up?
Like giving up, yeah.
Yep.
And resentful.
Resentful, absolutely.
And I feel like I want to force them to do what I want, like to force it.
Right. So you're feeling, you're feeling forceful and controlling.
And buffing, Mom. Nothing buffing.
I feel like I want to run away.
Run away, yeah.
I feel stuck, like I know I'm doing the wrong thing, but I can't stop from doing it.
Right.
I think that parenting road rage is exactly how I feel.
Uh-huh.
I can see myself in the moment, but I just feel like I have no other choice.
No other choice. Yes, no other choice. That's trapped. Anything else? Anybody feel guilty?
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And helpless.
Right. And defeated and coming down on yourself then.
Yeah, defeated.
And it keeps it all going.
And that place of feeling like a failure. Okay. Yeah. Now, and again, fill these in as they come to you.
I will.
Now, did somebody say something else? Okay, so now, what do you do when you feel this way? What are your reactions?
Scream.
Yelling.
I usually repeat myself, but then it escalates to screaming.
Uh-huh.
Like repeating myself.
Right, repeating yourself over and over, and then it just gets louder and louder.
Right. Threaten.
Nag.
Nag. What else?
Well, I have a whole physical response in myself.
Yes,
my stomach
good.
Gets tight. My, you know.
Exactly. Those are your
blood
cues.
Pressure. All that stuff.
Yes. Those are important cues. So when that happens, that signals you that your button is getting pushed. So how do you react to your child? Any other reactions? Anybody
lash out?
Threatening? Do you punish?
I have spanked.
Spanked?
Mm-hmm.
How about
basically?
What?
Punish.
Yelling for me is the biggest thing. I feel like sometimes I'm yelling so loud.
Yelling.
I realize later my throat hurts because I was yelling so loud.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. And
I tend to panic and probably what you'd say implode. I don't shout so much anymore. It's
right.
More like, God, what do I do? What do I do? What do I do?
Right.
It's kind of like a freezing.
Right, yeah.
And again, that's a very bodily thing. It's in my body.
Mm-hmm, exactly. Okay, now what I would like you to note, some of you, is that very often our reactions, the reactions that feel like they're out of our control, are very often the same behaviors that we see in our children that push our buttons, right?
Yeah.
Screaming and the yelling and the, sometimes hitting, sometimes we certainly talk back to our kids, don't we? We don't listen to them. We certainly don't follow their instructions. Sometimes we ignore them.
This morning, I actually heard myself saying to my daughter in a loud borderline yelling voice to stop yelling at her sister. That nobody's going to listen to you when you're yelling. And I was yelling it at her.
Right. And then they become our mirrors. Right.
Yep.
Okay. All right. I'm going to mute you all now. And as soon as anyone wants to make a comment or raise their hand, again, it's star 2 to do that, and I will see it. So I want to just talk a little bit about where we're going to be going with this course. The goal here is this course is not about, although we'll certainly talk about things through the course, but it's not about what do I do to get my child to stop pushing my buttons. Sorry to say. What we're going to do is look at the buttons that we have that were there a long time ago and figure out how we can respond to our children a little more objectively, a little more neutrally. You all know what it's like to respond to your child and be calm. And you know how effective that is. So it's how can I have that kind of calm and that kind of confidence when my button has been pushed? And the answer is you can't. So therefore, we want to learn how to defuse the buttons so that we can respond more effectively. First, we have to learn what our buttons are and why we react the way we do. And take responsibility for those buttons. And that's a lot of what this course is about, is taking responsibility for ourselves and what the choices are that we make, because these are choices, and you'll learn to have more control over it. So where we're going to be going is a lot of different layers and steps to understanding ourselves in a better way. So I often call this a consciousness raising program. And I think of consciousness raising like a dimmer switch. It's not like an off-on switch, but it's like a dimmer switch. Every new thing you learn is just raising your consciousness a little bit. So it's getting a little bit brighter and a little bit brighter. And sometimes it's going to feel crummy, you know. Sometimes it's not going to, you're not going to like it. It's going to feel a little more painful, but that's all part of consciousness raising, isn't it? So we want to learn what happens to us when our button gets pushed and we go on automatic. These are knee-jerk reactions that we have. We just, something happens to us. We're not aware of that. It's unconscious, but our child says that thing, does that behavior, gives us that look, puts her hand on her hip, gives that swagger, whatever it is. And it triggers something deep, deep, deep inside, and it feels like it's out of your control. So we're going to look at how you can get control. And then you will have a clearer perception and a little bit of detachment from the situation so that you can be more effective. And ways of avoiding power struggles, because a power struggle is only a power struggle when you engage in it, right? A battle doesn't happen if one army turns around and goes the other way. So power struggles happen, and boy, did I learn this the hard way with my daughter. I would get into power struggles with her every single morning, and I realized once I was able to change my perception of what she was doing, I chose not to engage, and therefore there were no more power struggles. So you are in charge of how many power struggles you have. So let's get a little further with that. You also, I'm sure, want to maintain your authority, which flies totally out the window when your button gets pushed, right? You want to have a sense of authority and effectiveness as a parent. You know, when you're talking about feeling helpless and like a failure as a parent, first of all, know you are in very, very good company. I have taught this course a gazillion times, and none of you said anything that I don't hear all the time. This is so common, so typical. And we think because we're parents, we're not supposed to do this. We're not supposed to feel this way. We're certainly not supposed to behave this way. And so then we get down on ourselves and really do a number on ourselves. We're really good at that. So we want to be able to recognize our buttons and learn to diffuse them so that we can be effective at setting limits, at empathizing, at problem solving, at whatever the situation calls for. And diffusing your button means taking the charge out of it. As you'll see as we go on, the button is not going to go away, but it won't be as charged. And that's the goal. So I'm going to talk a little bit about our agendas now. We're going to talk about different concepts that are going to be important throughout the course. Anybody have anything important to say at this point? I don't see anyone's hand raised, so I'll go on, but whenever you do. So we all have agendas that are going on in our heads at all times, right? We have things we have to do, things we forgot to do, things that we wish we could be doing, all kinds of stuff, how we feel, how we have present circumstances that are demanding our attention, what I should be doing now, what I forgot to do. We have experiences from the past that we anticipate happening. So, you know, we'll hear one little sound from our child and we'll think, here we go again, because you know exactly what's coming. So there are all kinds of experiences. We have expectations of ourselves. We have expectations of our children. We have expectations based on what we've experienced in the past. We have standards of behavior that we hold that are just kind of broader than expectations. But we all have this. We don't really think about it. But when you're with other people, you kind of judge people based on the standards of behavior that you hold. And those standards come from the way you were raised. We all have emotions going on all the time. You know, whatever you're feeling about the past, present, or future, they can be right with you. The perceptions, the fears that you have at any given moment, your hormonal balance or imbalance, are you PMSing? Are you feeling really out of sorts? Your stress level, whether you got a cold or not, if you're sick, however stressed you are, your attitude about things, all of these pieces make up your agenda at any given moment. So I'm going to actually read something from the book that, from the When Your Kids Push Your Buttons book, that I think kind of puts this together. Imagine your agenda as a puzzle. Each piece is a picture, even though incomplete by itself. Each piece is a part of the whole. The whole picture is a sum of its pieces. Some pieces give more clues to the whole picture than others. Some pieces give clues to other pieces. What I need to buy at the grocery store, how little time I have to get there, my frustration with my son over not getting his coat on, the hopelessness I feel about the argument I had with my husband this morning, how resentful I am about missing dinner with my friends, what a mess my house is, my guilt over not having called my sick aunt for over a month, and how awful my hair looks. are only a fraction of the thoughts that occupy my mind at any given moment, and these only concern the present. We want our children's behavior to change so that our agenda is not disrupted or inconvenienced. After all, what thoughts we have on our minds, what we have to do, what we're worried about is what matters. If I have a report due at work tomorrow, my house is a disorganized mess, and my child is being defiant, my agenda is loaded. So if I'm tired, have not started the report, have no time to clean, have an empty refrigerator, and I know how my spouse feels about disorganization, and my four-year-old has left his toys all over the living room floor, guess who I will take it out on when he says, I can't pick up my toys, I'm too tired. In this state of mind, with this agenda, it's highly unlikely that I will be considerate of my son, handle the situation effectively, or understand his agenda. So hopefully you all could relate to that situation that happens to us how many times a day. We don't usually think about agendas because we're just doing what we have to do. And all of us are out to get what we want when we want it. That's always what I say is the child's number one job. And we'll get to that more when we talk about expectations in another class. But just note for now, it is absolutely appropriate and normally developmental for a child to have his focus on getting what he wants when he wants it. That is what children are all about. That is what your realistic expectation should be. That doesn't mean he's going to get it. But when you know that that is what to expect, it helps you deal with it when the demand comes. But I'm saying this because isn't it true of all of us? Don't we all want what we want when we want it? Isn't that why our buttons are getting pushed? So as well as considering your own agenda, and imagine, you know, I'm sure you can all quickly imagine what it's like in the morning when you're trying to get your out the door, your kids to school, you to work, whatever, and you've got multiple kids to deal with or things, you know, plans to have to happen to get backpacks loaded, homework taken care of, whatever is going on. And that in and of itself is a pretty loaded agenda, but then you get to the car and your car won't start or something like that. You get a call and a crisis has happened. Boom, your agenda is loaded. And I have this image, as I'm kind of visual when it comes to things like this. So I have this image, this may seem kind of crazy, but I think of agendas as being wrapped in cheesecloth. And we all know what cheesecloth is. It's basically holes separated by tiny, tiny pieces of string. So typically, in any given day, if we're just kind of going along status quo, there are a lot of those holes that are plugged with pieces of my agenda, what I have to do, what's going on with me, how I'm feeling, what my stress level is, how impatient I am, all of that. But usually there's a lot of holes that are open, and there's give and take, there's flow that can happen. But when something happens, when my child pushes my button big time, or my car won't start, or something crisis happens, boom, that cheesecloth becomes solid. My agenda is fully loaded. There is no give and take whatsoever. So that's my image of what happens when we get into these situations and typically when a button gets pushed. Now, I want you to switch gears for a second and think about What happens to your child? What about your child's agenda? All of the same things that I listed before that make up our agenda also make up our child's agenda. And I want you all to write this down because I think this is so important. My child's agenda is just as important to him as mine is to me. That we often don't take into consideration. When I have to get out the door, when I have to get to work because my boss has warned me if I'm late one more time, if I have to get two or three kids to school, and that's dependent on getting, you know, breakfast at exactly the right time and everybody having all of their stuff organized so we're ready to leave at a certain time, all of those things are really important, and that's all I focus on. And I expect my child to follow my agenda. We don't think about that, though. However, whatever's going on with your child at that time is his agenda. Whether it is something that seems absolutely trivial to you or not. If your child is playing, that city he's building with his Legos and that toy truck that he's running along the road to go to this house over here in the city to deliver milk to this family to save this baby's life, I'm exaggerating a little, but maybe not, that is just as important to him as you getting to work on time. So when we are aware of other people's agendas, we often are aware of our friends' agendas, we will be considerate of them and say, oh gosh, I know you've got a really busy schedule and I know you've got this coming up and I know you've got this on your plate and this is going on and so I don't want to interfere with such and such. Or, you know, let's say you're moving and you have your whole house filled with boxes and your the moving truck is arriving on Saturday and you're going to call for some help. Chances are you are not going to call up your best friends and say, be over here at 9 o'clock on Saturday, and if you're late, there will be no pizza for you. But that's how we talk to our kids. What you're going to do in a situation like that is say, you know, I know you probably, I don't even know if you've got Saturday available. I know so many things are going on in your life. I would so appreciate it if you could give me a little bit of help. I've got all these boxes to load and blah, blah, blah. And you're extremely considerate and you're extremely appreciative and there's going to be pizza and beer and who knows what all, right? But we don't think about that when it comes to our children. We don't think about how important it might be and how many power struggles I might save if I went over to my son who's building this Lego city and when it's time to get coats and shoes on and say to him something like, wow, look at this cool city you're building here. This looks really important to you. We have to leave right now. And I know that's not what you want. I know you would much rather stay here. Let's think about what your next move is going to be. And over here on the side, set up a few more Lego pieces so you know exactly what you're going to do as soon as we come in the door this afternoon. That child, no guarantees, but probably is going to be way more cooperative than if you say, come on, hurry up, get your coat on. How many times do I have to tell you? Get over here, get your shoes on this minute. Why do I have to yell 20 times to get you to listen to me? Right? So when that is going on, we want to be able to realize that our children like consideration just as much as anyone else. Okay, someone has raised their hand and I can't see the first name. So who is this? I haven't unmuted you. Here we go.
Oh, okay.
Here we go. Yes, sorry.
Hi.
This is Nicole?
Yeah, it's Nicole.
Hi.
Hi. My daughters are 6 and 9.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just wondering, like, as you're describing how to approach that situation, I've been doing it wrong for so long that it just feels so almost, I hate to use the word fake, but like they're going to look at me, you know, like I'm
exactly. I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah. And when I talk about this kind of, and I will use the word respectful communication, kids look at us like, where are we coming from? And I do think that your children are going to look at you like you're crazy at first, and they're going to wonder, you know, they're going to be very suspicious and all of that. But I do think that you're not going to be able to plunge right into it because it's like learning a foreign language. It really is. It just doesn't come
mm-hmm.
naturally to us, I'm sorry to say. So you're going to do a little bit at a time, and they will be so appreciative. It will just, they'll just like open their eyes and you know, I think it's going to feel the weirdest to you. And it will feel weird to your children, and they may be a little suspicious, but just stay with it. And you might even, if you see the eyebrows raised, you might say, sounds like a different mother, doesn't it? You know, make light of it.
Mm-hmm.
And but you can also say, I realize that I haven't been paying attention to what is going on with you nearly as much as I've been paying attention to what's going on with me and how important that is. So I'm trying to just, you know, be a little different with this now. Does that help?
Yeah. And if they argue, through it, like argue about whatever it is that you're peacefully asking them to break away from, you just keep, the idea is to keep calm and just kind of stay the course and calmly state what you need.
Yes, and as we go along in the course, we're gonna talk more about what's going on in you that prevents you from staying calm.
Okay.
So hopefully that will all come into play.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But for now, and in your workbook, there's this on page 4. There's this exercise that I'm going to give you for homework that you can do, and we'll talk more about that in a few minutes. But I think the most important thing is to just realize, Nicole, I'm going to put you back on mute. Anything
okay.
more you want? Anything more to add?
Nope. Thank you.
Okay. So. The most important thing to take into consideration right now is just to ask yourself, what's my child's agenda? What's going on with her that is making this be difficult for her right now or something like that? Just put your mind on your agenda and your child's agenda. And a lot of the time, they just don't mesh. Now, let me make a disclaimer here. This is not about leaving your agenda, putting it on hold, and letting your child do what his agenda is all about. I am not saying that at all. I'm not saying you say, oh, okay, we'll stay home while you can build your Lego city. Not at all. What I'm saying is that when people have consideration of us for what's going on in our lives, we are going to be way more cooperative with that person who is requesting something from us than if they're demanding it. So, that said, I'm going to move on a little bit more, and hopefully we will come back to this, and all of these things we're going to be talking about today are concepts that we want to keep in mind and we'll talk about throughout. So the next piece is the gap, and you have an illustration of the gap in your workbook on page 5. The gap is the space between the message I intend to teach my child something, what I am sending my child, and the message the child receives. So the gap is that space between what I am telling my child and what my child hears. And in that gap, all kinds of things can happen. So with this illustration, you can see that this mother's intention is to motivate her child. This is all best intentions. We always have best intentions of teaching our children to listen, teaching our children to be respectful, teaching our children to be more patient, teaching our children to be more disciplined with their homework, on and on and on. These are all our intentions. But when our buttons get pushed, that intention goes down the drain. And our reaction sends a very loud and clear message to our child. So in this case, this mom is reacting with, why can't you just do your homework? You're so lazy. Do you want to flunk the fifth grade? And her agenda, she's stressed, she's worried, she's catastrophizing. Her daughter's going to flunk out of school, certainly never graduate from high school, much less go to college. That everything is very hurried. She's rushed. She's impatient. And all of that. So she gets her button pushed. Her intention goes down the tubes, and her reaction to her child sends the message to the child who's thinking, I can't get anything right. Nobody understands me. Mom expects me to be perfect. I'm not wanted in this family. This is a really, really powerful understanding, I believe, because it happens with everyone where all of this happens with everyone we're in relationship with. So when I react, I am going to send my child a message I least intend, something I would never, ever want her to believe about herself, which is something like, I'm not good enough. You don't like me. You want me to be more like my sister. All kinds of messages like that. And so therefore, the child then behaves according to how she perceives you expect her to behave. So if she is thinking she's the troublemaker, if he's thinking he's the lazy because of things that we say. And remember, it's their perception. You're not telling them this. It's the last thing you would ever tell your child. But sometimes things slip out, and certainly the frustrations and the impatience and all of that that comes with it just exudes messages to our children that they pick up on, and depending on their sensitivity, depending on their temperament, they're going to perceive it in a certain way, and then they're going to behave accordingly and react or not react. Temperament is a big piece of all of this. You know, how many of you were good girls and boys when you were growing up? How many of you were rebels? That has to do with your temperament. Whether you're going to take what your parent is saying back when, whether you took what your parent was saying to you and did exactly as you thought as was expected, that was me, I was primo good girl, or you just can't because your temperament will not allow that. The more easygoing temperament, the more compliant temperament, the good girl temperament, is one that we all think we want in our children. But lo and behold, not a good idea. So the fighting temperament, the child who won't take no for an answer, the child who will not be told what to do, and this was my Molly, and my son Casey, my first child, was the easygoing kid. He would do anything I expected him to do. So Molly was the one who would not take it. And I thought she was being defiant and obnoxious and disrespectful and disobedient and blah, 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 blah. We'll get to all of that. But what's important to realize is that every time I reacted to her with anger, with criticism, with threats, with blame, what she took in, because that temperament happens to be way more sensitive than the other, what she took in is, I'm bad. You don't love me. I can't get my needs met. I am not okay. And so her behavior would reflect that. And her behavior got more and more not okay. So this is a really big, heavy thing, I realize, but very, very important. If we look at the example on page 6, Adam has just screamed, "I hate you," at his mother, Ellen, after she turned off the television and insisted he begin his homework. Ellen got her button pushed. So her intention is to teach Adam to treat her with respect. And then there's this whole list of all the stuff that's going on with her agenda. She's tired. She's had a hard day at work, thinks Adam is being rude. She fears he's going to be disrespectful always. Had a fight with her husband, has to get dinner ready, blah, blah, blah. All of that comes together to fuel her button. And so she yells, "Don't you ever talk to me like that again. You get to your room this minute and no TV for the rest of the week." But what Adam hears her saying is, "You can't ever do anything right. You're always a problem." And so what he thinks about himself is, nobody cares about me or lets me do what I want. I always have to do what she wants. And maybe he is of the temperament who is then going to say, "I'll show her." So all of this stuff goes on in our kids' minds. And this is, a little older child, but it's still going on big time with little kids as well. And the little children don't have from 1 to about 6 or 7, they don't have the brain capacity to process what they're taking in. You know, a 4-year-old can't say, "Oh, mommy's just having a bad day. I'll let that slide. She's, you know." They don't do that. Their experiences come into their systems like data on software. They just are imprinted. And it's not until kids are a little older that they can take it in and make some decisions about it and decide. something may be different. So they're just, these kids are just reacting to what the data is that's coming in, what they think it's telling them about themselves. Isabella. Wait a minute. Isabella, yes.
Yes.
Okay. Sorry.
So my daughter's 8 years old, and this is exactly what's going on. Her temperament is, I guess, a little bit, from how I hear you speaking, like your daughter, as your daughter was. And she's a little bit rebellious and is also the type to take initiative and can impose herself either to be helpful or to tell the other kids what to do. And so, of course, she's being reprimanded for this at school. And, right now she's experiencing anxiety because of this. And I, you know, how do you deal with a situation like that? What do you tell your child? What do you tell the child's teacher?
Well, I think how you can work with her is to let her unload all of that on you. Right, so let her tell you about all of the stuff that's going on, and instead of telling her what to do about it, you want to just listen, and you want to understand, let her know that you completely understand her feelings.
Mm-hmm.
When you say, I get it that this situation is confusing you, is making you feel really unheard or misunderstood. You're not blaming the teacher or the school at that point. You're empathizing. You're saying, I really get what this feels like. I know, I can see that this situation, given who you are, given your age, and given your temperament, I certainly understand how you are feeling about this. You might tell a story of your own from your past. And then you can maybe do a little role playing with her about how to deal with the situation, what she would like to say. One thing that I really advocate is when your child is having a difficult time outside the home, when your child is dealing with either a friend, maybe even a best friend, and something really awful has gone on, or something is going on at school, or whatever, let them unload it all on you. Be clear that this is your child's problem. It feels, I know that Mike feel at first cold and hard to say that. That doesn't mean you're going to wash your hands of the situation and walk away. It means that when you understand that your child is having the problem, then you can get a little bit of distance so that you can actually be much more helpful than when you get all upset and worried about it too. Not that you're not going to, because you're a mother, but...
Yes.
So in a situation like that, I often suggest doing a role play with your child. So you be the person, the teacher, the friend, whoever it is that she's having a hard time with, and let her know that right now, for this period of time, you can say absolutely anything you want, as loud as you want, and nobody's going to blame you. Nobody's going to get you in trouble. Nobody's going to say anything. Just blow it out, everything you want to say. And let her just yell and scream about it. Get all that frustration out.
Mm-hmm.
And then, after that's over, then say, what do you think would be a good idea to do here? What would you like your teacher to know about you that you think she doesn't now? How would you like this problem to be handled? And if it's something that you think you need to get involved with, you can say either, would you like me to talk to your teacher? Because a lot of kids will say, no, no, don't go to school, don't tell anybody. Or sometimes they'll want you to do the whole thing. You fix it, especially if they're used to having you fix it. And so if she wants you to be involved, ask her what she would like you to do. You see, typically, this is problem solving. Typically what we do at this point is tell our children what they should do, what they should say, what they should think, and what they should feel. And what we're doing is projecting an adult point of view on our child.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't work 99% of the time. And we're teaching our children to think through situations themselves. So, you know, she might say she wants her teacher to explode, or she wants her teacher to get fired, or something like that. Let that come. Let that be okay. You know, we don't want to, at a point like this, we don't want to come in and say, now, don't you ever talk like that about your teacher, or you always have to do what teachers tell you to do, and all of that. This is a time when you want those feelings to come out, right? And then you can say, I really get it, how you feel about this. And unless you are worried that your child doesn't know the difference between fantasy and reality, which is a whole different story, you can allow this. And your child is going to naturally feel more empowered.
Okay.
And then you can talk about, you know, do you want to say something to her? Maybe she'll say, I want you to write her an email, and you can have her dictate it to you. Get her engaged in the process as much as possible, which will feel very empowering.
Okay.
Okay?
Very good. Thank you.
All right. Let me tell you a little story about Molly. This was long after I had had my perception switch and things were going much better with us. But she was in she was in third grade, and she was on the school bus with a bus driver who assigned seats. And Molly was assigned a space between a girl on her left next to the window who she had no problem with and a fourth grader. Molly's third grade. She had a fourth grader sitting on the aisle next to her. And that child made fun of Molly a lot. She'd kick her, and then Molly would kick her back, and Molly would get in trouble with the bus driver, and blah, blah, blah. And this sort of situation was going on for a while. I'd hear it would bubble up at home every now and then, and I thought, well, this is going to come to a head at some point. And one day I watched her walking into the house from the bus, and I could tell by the look on her face that this was the day. So I put all of my agenda aside. Sure enough, she walked through the door, threw her backpack down, and burst into tears. I picked her up, and I took her into the couch, and I sat with her, and I just held her while she cried and screamed and cried and screamed. She was so hurt and so mad all at the same time. And she just kept yelling, I hate her, I hate her, she's blah, 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 and all this. And she knew, trusted completely where I was coming from and knew that I was going to be supportive of her. You see, this is another thing. You're not going to hear stories like this from kids if they think you're going to tell them what to do or you're going to be critical of how they're feeling or what they did. So I said, oh, boy, I bet you just wish you could punch her out. See, I always go for allowing in fantasy what children can't do in reality. And Molly knew this, so she said, yes, and I want to pull her arms and legs off. And it just went on, and she's screaming and crying, and all I'm doing is saying, I bet you do, or just holding her. And then I said, I think we need to get out the punching pillow, which I recommend all families have, a big punching pillow that you can just get out all your frustrations on. So I got the punching pillow and I handed it to her, and she grabbed it from me and she threw it down on the floor and she started jumping up and down and up and down and up and down on this pillow, screaming and yelling, I'm so mad at her. And I said, Molly, what do you want to have happen? And she said, I want everybody to get mad at her. I want her mother to get mad at her. I want the bus driver to get mad at her. I want you to get mad at her. I want everybody to get mad at her. And she's just crying and so exhausted. And then I said, what would you like to do about this, Mom? And she's still jumping up and down on the pillow. And she said, I want you to write her a letter. And I thought, aha, this is interesting. Okay, I'll have her dictate this letter. And this had been going on now for about a half an hour, this whole purging and yelling and jumping on the pillow and all of this. And at this point, I had to pee the worst way in the world. And so I got a paper and pencil. I'm all thinking, you know, in my head, I'm going to have her write this all down and dictate this letter, and this is all going to be great. And so I had the paper and pencil in my hand, and I said, Mal, hold on 1 second. I have to go to the bathroom. I will be right back. And by the time I came back, she was sitting on the couch reading a book. And I picked up the pad and pencil, and I said, okay, Ma, what do you want to say in this letter? And from behind the book, she said, not now, I'm reading. And I just about fell apart. I just thought, well, Bonnie, you really blew that. And I knew her, and I knew once she got behind a book, there was no getting her out of it. And I thought, well, you lost that opportunity, because I had it all nicely wrapped up in a nice little bow, how this was all going to turn out. So I thought to myself, well, we'll maybe get back to it after dinner or something. And dinner time came, and at that point, we were doing this little thing around the table, my husband and my son, and she and I have sang something that we were grateful for that day. And my husband said something, and my son said something, and I said something. Normally, Molly would pass. She didn't like this game very much, and she'd just say pass. But this night, the three of us went, and then Molly said, in the same vein as if she were saying pass the salt, she said, I'm so grateful that I worked out the problem with Susan. It was over. I never heard another word about Susan. It was over. So what that told me was that she had the experience of being empowered when she was getting all of this out and saying what she wanted to have happen. And it was somehow over. And I don't know what happened from that moment on the bus. I don't know how she handled it after that. But I never heard anything more about it. And I think it just gave her some kind of sense of herself that she could then deal with it from then on. So that's that story. So what she got from me on the other side of the gap was, your feelings are always valid. Your feelings mean that they are stemming from something that was upsetting to you. You have a right to those feelings. You have a right to your fantasies. You have a right to your thoughts. If I had said, you know, anything like, that is not a nice thing to say, Molly. And how many of us were brought up with, if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say it at all? that sends a very powerful message to us, right? That sends a message that we're not okay, because there is not a child alive who doesn't have horrible thoughts and fantasies. That's why they love fairy tales so much. And so we've got to help them understand that all of that is normal and perfectly appropriate and perfectly okay. Then when that's okay, then how they handle themselves in reality is going to be much more controlled and contained. That's my experience. So we don't have any hands raised at the moment, so I'm going to move on to the emotional chain reaction, which is on page 7 in your workbook. The emotional chain reaction is the basic model that all of this button pushing works from. This is what is going to be most important for you to think about and understand, and we are going to deal with this all the way through. So in this first example you have here, what we typically think is that our child's behavior is what causes our reaction. We yell, we scream, we blame, we punish, we do whatever we do because our child is behaving this way, right? That is how we typically think. And what that means is it is my child's responsibility how I behave. So I may be saying something like, why do you always make me yell at you? The make me yell at you. Why do I have to say this 10 times in order for you to listen? Make me have to. What I'm telling my child is that you are responsible for my behavior. It's not what we want to teach our children at all. And so this is where I am a real stickler on how responsible we have to be for ourselves. What we say, what we do, and most important, what we think and what we perceive. So the middle example, we put the emotion in here. This is the exercise we were doing at the beginning, right? So my child's behavior makes me angry, frustrated, resentful, exhausted, whatever I'm feeling. And that causes me to react the way I do. If only I didn't get so angry. If only I could feel stronger about such and such. But we still react in the same way. And so what we're saying to our child is, you are responsible for my emotions. You are the one who is making me feel this way. And we all do this because, for the most part, this is the way most of us were raised. This is the way we shirk off responsibility to somebody else. We learned it growing up, and we continue to do it as parents. And children are, unfortunately, the innocent victims of this. Now, the lower example is what really happens. My child looks at me in a certain way, says that certain phrase, you know, like whatever, or you're not the boss of me, or you're stupid, or I hate you, or a roll of the eyes, or a swagger, or something that typically pushes my button. And what happens next, the piece that we pay least amount of attention to, and usually never, is that that behavior provokes assumptions in our heads. Those assumptions are our ideas, our fears, our judgments, our perceptions. This is where we jump to conclusions. This is where we assume that my child is, or I am. My child is being disrespectful, or I am a failure as a parent that I haven't brought her up better. Those are the assumptions that we make at lightning speed, so fast that we don't even realize it. And it's those assumptions that lead to our emotions that then lead to our reactions. This is going to take some practice to get used to thinking about, but what is important to realize is that when you react the way you do, you are can then say, when I behave this way, I make up ideas that provoke the feelings which cause me to react the way I do. So when you, my child, behave this way, I think that you're being mean or lazy or disrespectful, and therefore I'm afraid that I've not taught you how to behave properly. And it's this perception that causes me to feel angry or whatever, and then to react. So these assumptions, let's take it out of the field of parenting for a second. Let's say you're in the supermarket, and there you've got a child on your hip and another one in the grocery cart, and you're in a hurry. You've got to go pick up your older child from school or something. You're really feeling rushed. And there's a woman in front of you who has bought half the store. And the cashier is going through each item, and the scanner is not really working properly, or she can't get it right or something. And it's, each item is taking a minute and a half. And you're, like, fuming and thinking, why can't this store hire anybody competent ever? Or whatever's going on in your head. And suddenly this woman from behind you leans forward and says, oh, the poor thing, I wonder if it's her first day. So you see how absolutely everything we witness, we witness from our own perception. So the woman standing behind you didn't have the same agenda that you had, right? Maybe she had all the time in the world. Who knows? Maybe her temperament is entirely different. But she saw, oh, my gosh, this poor girl, I wonder how awful she must be feeling. And you're thinking, why can't they get anybody who knows what they're doing? So we all look at things differently. And when we see our child's behavior, it's important to realize that your assumption about that behavior, what your idea of your child's behavior is just that. It's yours. It's your perception of what's going on. If you have a child who's saying, you're stupid, you don't know, and that pushes a button in you, that means you're taking it personally. You're making an assumption about that, and we're going to dig into this a lot deeper. But you're making an assumption about what your child is saying that is triggering your button. And a different parent, maybe, or someone who's not a parent, might have no problem at all with a child. You know, I might have no problem at all with a child saying, you're stupid, because I would understand it in a different way, and I might, you know, I might even be able to make a joke out of it. Whoa, it must be so awful to have such a stupid mother. or, ah, so you think I'm really stupid. No wonder you're angry with me. You know, so then you get a conversation going about it, and you kind of take the air out of your child's balloon. But you see how you can't do that when your button's been pushed. It's impossible. You can't respond effectively. So, you know, it gets taken personally, and then we react. But this model is what I want you to get in the habit of going back to after a situation is over. Now, please don't any of you expect that suddenly you're going to turn into this miraculous new parent and you're not going to get your button pushed anymore. That ain't going to happen. But after a situation is over, I suggest the parents to have paper and pencil handy in most of the rooms that you spend most of your time in. And just go back after it's over and you reacted in a way that you hate and your child is, you know, furious and blah, blah, blah. Go back and write down, first of all, write down how you felt. Because that, I think, is the easiest. How you felt during that situation. And then say to yourself, okay, this is how I felt. And then write down how you reacted, what that feeling prompted you to do, how you reacted, what you said, what you did. And then if you didn't like that reaction, know that it was your assumption that provoked it. So ask yourself, if I reacted this way, if I felt this way and I reacted this way, what must I have been thinking in order to provoke that? So if any of you have an idea of what I'm talking about and can come up, have an idea in your head of an assumption that you might be making, please raise your hand and let's talk about this. Because I want to get you familiar with this idea so you all know what I'm talking about. Okay, Nicole. Yes, Nicole.
Hi, Bonnie.
Hi.
My assumption, I think one of my major assumptions that works against me is that I've made so many mistakes and that I'm a bad mother.
Right.
And that I'm never going to get it right. And I think I have a ton of anger from my own childhood that makes me feel resentful and at the same time, like I don't know what I'm doing and that I'm too damaged to figure it out right.
And boy, can't you just see how that spirals you down into that dark hole?
Yep. I mean, I wasn't expecting this, but it's just making me cry just saying it out loud.
Yeah, of course, of course. And, you know, we typically either blame ourselves or we blame our children, and then it'll go back and forth, and sometimes we can't take any more blame on ourselves, and so we blame our children, and, you know, it just gets all messy and mushy, and it's coming from old stuff. And so what we're going to talk about in the next class is reframing our assumptions. So write down these assumptions, and anybody else who has any, please raise your hand and we'll talk to you. I'll talk to you. So when you have an assumption like this, write it down. And then in terms of reframing it, it's not about turning Pollyanna. It's not about saying, you know, oh, Nicole, don't be silly. You're a great mother.
Mm-hmm.
Because right now, that's not real to you.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to reframe it into something like, I'm feeling really overwhelmed right now and I need help. So that isn't, you know, that's something that will help you see a little more objectively what's going on with you. So when we're making assumptions, we're making judgments, right? Your judgment of yourself is that you don't know the first thing about parenting. You're the worst parent on earth, and all of your old damages are going to damage your children, and you just feels helpless. And so you need to come up with something that feels realistic to you, but something that helps you move forward. If you're thinking about a child, if you say your child never listens, for instance, Nicole, I'm going to mute you, and then we can, anybody else who wants to raise their hand, please do. But let's say your child, you think, he never listens. And it feels like the truth to you, right? The truth with a capital T. And so what that means is that you are going to react negatively to a child who never listens. You can't, as a perfectly respectable, responsible parent, you can't allow your child to go on never listening to you, so you're going to react. And you're going to react, think about the gap, with all best intentions of teaching him that he's got to listen. But you're certainly not taking his agenda into consideration. You're certainly not reading his behavior in the way that we're going to get to in the next class, and really understanding behavior and what it means and where it comes from. But you're thinking, he never listens. So that is going to lead you to feel what? And that emotion is going to lead you to react in an angry or helpless or hopeless way. You're going to come down on him really hard, or you're going to give up, or you're, something ineffective is going to happen. When you think he never listens, you're going to be thinking more through feelings of anger and resentment. Okay, so to reframe that, what I'm hoping that you will get into the habit of when you understand more of the layers of this process, you can look at him and see that he's not listening because he's, maybe because he doesn't like what he's hearing right now. Maybe because he's heard enough directing and nagging and lecturing for one day, and he's tuned out. Maybe he's not listening because he's so totally involved in what he's doing that he's shut everything else out. So you see how those assumptions are going to, they're still realistic, they're still real. This is not fairyland and you're making up something. This is what's actually happening. You may not know exactly why in that moment, but if you can say, if he's not listening to me, there's a reason here, or he's not listening because he doesn't like what I'm saying, how can I say it differently? This is going to lead you to be more understanding of your child, as opposed to angry and resentful of your child. Do you see? And that, those emotions are then going to provoke very different responses from you. So when you can reframe your assumption, and we will talk a lot more about this next class, when we can reframe them, what we're doing is putting our head into a more realistic place. We're not catastrophizing. We're not taking ourselves down the tubes. We're not, all of that stuff is still there, but we're looking at it from a different perspective. And next time I'll tell you the story of my daughter and how I shifted from she's out to get me, which was my assumption that I had of her every single morning, to she's miserable. And in that 180-degree shift in my head, I went from anger and fury at her and all kinds of stuff about myself that I hadn't brought her up better, to compassion. And that's what we need in order to be effective parents. We need to have compassion for our children no matter what their behavior. And this does not mean, I will say this again and again, this does not mean your children are allowed to do whatever they want. I was a pretty firm parent. I was very strong and, you know, limits were limits and this is the way it goes. But I was learned to be very respectful and considerate of what my children were going through and what they heard from me. So that's what I want you to get to be able to do that 180-degree shift in your head, to switch your perception from thinking that your children are defiant and not listening and talking back and procrastinating and all of that. See, how can I shift that in my mind? How can I think differently about it that will lead me to be more understanding or more compassionate? Any questions about that? So we're just about out of time. It's amazing how fast it goes. And I want you to, I want to tell you about what the homework is going to be. And I, you know, obviously this is up to you whether you do this or not, but I can assure you you'll get a lot more out of this program if you do this work throughout the week and not just while we're on the phone or while you're listening to the replay. So back on page 4, I want you, these are exercises that when I'm leading a group in person, these are exercises we do during the class. And obviously we're not going to take 10 minutes of silence during a teleseminar and have you do this exercise. So I want you to do these during the week, and then we will go over, you know, 2 or 3 of them, however much we have time for, in the following week. So you'll get a sense of how to do these. So on page 3 in your workbook is just an example. So this gives you an idea of how to do this. But these complete the sentence exercises, and there'll be one every week. I don't want you to think about I've done this the right way or the wrong way. It's just kind of go as much kind of quickly through it as you can. Since you'll have all the time in the world to do it, because I know you have nothing else to do and your agendas are completely free, you'll probably have more time to put some thought to it, but it's not that you need to do that. You can do it quite quickly. And they get harder each week, so do get used to doing it. And then on page 8 in your workbook, there is a chart there to write down behaviors, emotions, and reactions, just as we did in that first exercise during the class, so that you can start jotting things down as the week progresses. This is a button-pushing behavior. This is not a behavior that you are perfectly effective at handling. Even when you're angry, there are times when you can be very effective with your kids. We're talking about those times when your button gets pushed, when you go into that road rage. So write down some behaviors, what the emotions were that behavior provoked in you, and how you reacted. And down at the bottom of the page are some typical assumptions, just very typical, just to kind of get your thoughts going about what is it that's going on in my head? What am I thinking? You know, and like Nicole said, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm not parenting effectively. I'm just a terrible parent. And that's, you know, an assumption. It is absolutely real. I hope you all understand that I am not in any way, shape, or form diminishing any of these thoughts that you have. What I'm saying is they are ways of sabotaging ourselves. And when we focus on how awful we think we are or how awful we think our child is, we are creating obstacles in our way of being effective with our kids. So these assumptions are typical. Then see if you can fill this out. When my child, and write down a button-pushing behavior, the instant thoughts that go through my head are, and write down as many of them as possible, and that will get you in the head of thinking about this model that is what happens to us when our buttons get pushed. This is it. And then if you are reading, it would be great to read through chapter 4 in the book, When Your Kids Push Your Buttons. They're pretty short chapters, and some we will already have covered, but there's a lot, obviously, a lot of information in the book that we won't cover here. So I think that's about all I have to say for this class. So any questions, any thoughts, anything? No one's up. Okay. Isabel.
Yes, I'd like to know, for the reading of the book, is it available online for online reading?
Yes.
Okay. And that's through your website, or
you can. All right. Yes, that information was on the page you were directed to after you registered. But I don't expect you to remember all that stuff. You can get the book either on Amazon, or you can order it from me from my website. And the website is BonnieHarris.com. And there's lots and lots and lots of stuff on that website for you to learn about. So,
but ordering from your website, can we get it online? Is it an online book or is it a paperback?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Okay.
You can. It's there in an MP3 version.
Okay, perfect.
You can download.
Thank you.
So that's there. And also, I have CDs of that book and my other book as well. Okay.
All right.
And then we have one other. Yes, and this is, and I have anonymous here, so I don't know who it is. Who else raised their hand?
It's Alana.
Hi, Alana.
Hi. Just wanted to clarify on page 8, on the bottom, the instant thoughts that go through my head, the examples on the bottom, is that what that's for?
That's the type. You want to come up with what's personal to you, of course.
Right. Okay.
The typical ones on the bottom are just to help you think about
that.
Okay?
Perfect. Okay. Thank you.
Great. and Isabella. Isabella?
Yes, no, I was done with my question.
Oh, okay, sorry. Anything else anyone wants to ask or clear up or comment on? Nope, all right. So, yes, here's one. Yes, Sheila.
When we do, by just, you know, it just really seems impossible. I'm just going to start off by saying that.
Yes.
But I know
okay.
It's workable, but I really, I'm like, ugh. Okay. I'm just in the mechanics of doing this. Is it kind of like, okay, when you step back and don't just, I mean, you can kind of look at it slow, more in a slowed down way.
Mm-hmm.
Then the next time it happens, does it cause a difference? Like, oh, you know,
I think so. Yeah,
okay.
Well, that's a very good question. And, of course, the mechanics work differently in every one of us. Some of us are more ready to tackle this and make changes than others. And I'm really glad you said this, Sheila, because I'm sure you're speaking for a lot of people that this, it feels hopeless. It feels like, wait a minute, I'm just going to do this little trickery thing in my head and think something different. So how I think of the mechanics of this course is that this is kind of brain work. What we're doing ultimately is changing the messages that we have in our subconscious and consciously thinking differently. So right now, before we're, you know, when everybody is behaving with your kids the way you don't like all this button pushing stuff, you are parenting in a way that is being driven by your subconscious. And we'll get more into that. We'll certainly get into that in part two for those of you who want to continue with part two. When that subconscious drives us, it feels like we have no control.
Right.
And so what I'm wanting you to see is that, in fact, you do have control. And, in fact, when you can put your focus on this and make new decisions, even if you're only buying it 30% of the way, you know, what you're going for is 51%. Nobody's going for perfect here. There is no such thing, and if you're striving for perfection, you're going to be beating your head against the brick wall for the rest of your life. So we're just going for improvement, and it's like that consciousness raising. So your question, Sheila, when you say, if I do this, does that mean the next time something happens, I'm going to be different? And that, of course, is up to you, but I do believe that if you do this work, your consciousness is going to be raised a little bit, and so you're going to be thinking about it, maybe not in the moment the next time. I certainly don't expect you to suddenly be able to diffuse this button. We haven't done half the work yet. But you're going to say, oh, all right, that's what was going on after it's over. All right, I reacted. You're just going to being more conscious of what it is, how you're reacting, and thinking about it in terms of your agenda versus your child's agenda, even if it's that.
Mm-hmm.
Many people who have taken this course said one of the biggest things they got out of it was understanding that their child does have an agenda.
Right.
Lots of us don't even consider that, and that alone can make a big difference. So, and thinking about what is the message I'm sending to my child when I say these words and do this thing,
mm-hmm.
right? And, yes, hopefully each time there will be a little bit more consciousness about what you're doing, and there'll be lots more to do. So please, none of you think that, oh, my God, by next week you've got to be completely revamping the way you deal with your kids. Not at all. Does that answer that?
Yes, that's great.
Okay.
I feel like it's impossible, but I know it works somehow. So.
Oh, good. That's all you need to know. Just have faith. It's
yeah.
really about having faith, because I do think this is like brain work. This is brain practice. What you're doing is, it's like learning math facts in school. You know, it's doing the practice, and it will eventually make a difference. It really will.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. So I'm going to sign off for today, and I wish you all the best of luck with this and lots of consciousness raising during the week. And I will talk to you next week, same time. So goodbye and good luck. And I will send you all the recording. I'm going to get the link for the recording right now, and I will send it all to you so you can listen to this again and again ad nauseum if you want. Okay. Bye-bye.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference.